Welcome to the Tao of Color Grading interview series, where we talk with influencers, thought leaders, and professionals about the field of color grading for moving images. Show notes, links, our free weekly newsletter, and our color training products can be found at taoofcolorgrading.com. And I'm your host, Patrick Inhofer. Welcome to part three of our interview with Alexis Van Herkman. In this part, we focused on one topic, setting up a grading room. We talk about the room, lighting, monitors, what to look for when buying a monitor, and of course, plasma versus LCD, and there's a whole lot more. Let's go. Let's talk a little bit about setting up a grading room.
Okay.
All right, because, and this I'm thinking, you know, selfishly in terms of Tao of Color, there are, you know, we've got a lot of people in Tao of Color who this is a new step for them. And they're looking to kind of take it to the next level. And for some people, taking it to the next level is closing the shades in the office.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about the environment. I don't know. Do you cover room setup?
I do. That's the very first chapter.
Beautiful.
The very first chapter. I mean, the analogy I use in the book is, If your kitchen isn't set up right, then you can't be an efficient cook.
Right.
That's just the bottom line. Right?
So if you're putting a kitchen together, what, and for color grading, what are, do you consider to be the essentials of setting up a proper kitchen that you can feel good about?
I would say there are three essentials. I mean, and this is assuming this is something you're serious about doing and you want to work on it semi-regularly. And you're in a situation where you're able to alter your environment to be suitable to the task. Really, there are three pillars of setting up your room: light control, having a proper monitor, and having a proper environment.
Right.
Those are the three things you absolutely need to have going for you. Otherwise, you're just going to run into hassles in terms of being able to properly see the image.
Yeah.
And it's all about making sure that when you look at the image on your calibrated broadcast display, that you're seeing what's really there. We've talked about simultaneous contrast. We've talked about the color opponent model of vision a little bit. You know, the most obvious example, and this is one that's in my book, people have seen it everywhere, you've got a red square and a green square.
Right.
And you have a gray square inside of both. And the gray squares are equal. They're
right.
Absolutely equal in value. But because of the color opponent model of vision, the red surround makes that gray square look a little green. And the green surround makes that little gray square look a little red. That is how we're wired. That's how we see. That's how the cells interact. There's nothing we can do about that. And it's not, you know, there's no way you can learn your way out of that. That's just the way it works. This is also true for simultaneous lumicontrast or luminance contrast. You know, if you've got a black square and a white square, and you put gray in the middle of each of those, then those levels of gray are going to look different
right.
because of the surround.
Right.
And again, there's nothing you can do about that. That's the way we're wired.
And the concept being then, if I'm in a room with my monitor and the wall behind it is painted red,
then,
as opposed to
yes,
being painted green.
That's exactly so.
I am going to create different images depending on...
It's
going to
affect your grading. And right. I've done this. I've just done this as an experiment with myself. You know, in a nutshell, you want a gray surround. Doesn't have to be 18% gray.
Right.
It can be if you want it to be. A lot of people like that.
Right.
Because it's Kodak's magic number. And there are good reasons for that.
Right.
But, you know, lighter or darker, I tend to prefer a wee bit darker. But you want a neutral gray, completely desaturated, no color tint at all. That's the important part.
Right.
And you want the wall behind your monitor to be this level of gray.
Right.
And it's you care about the surround. It's not like you have to be in a gray cube. I mean, I am.
Like, we're sitting in a gray right. cube right now. Right.
And that's how my suite is set yeah. up. Just because... Why not?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
It makes a statement. This is a grading suite.
And I really, frankly, don't have the energy to figure out what color to paint the back wall, so...
Right, right.
Gray works on the front, it'll work on the back.
I think Sony's ideal specs are 8 times the size of the monitor.
Is what the surround should be.
Is what the surround should be, and that's what should be your neutral gray.
Right.
And it should be gray, because you don't want it white or black.
Right.
Because that'll bias...
Contrast.
The contrast, or your perception of the contrast.
Right.
And you obviously don't want it to have a hue, because that'll bias your perception of the color.
Right.
So that's really as simple as it gets. You just don't want anything to make the monitor look different than what it is. And the other principle is, of course, you're usually working in a subdued environment, so the only way to have the gray wall seem gray is to have a certain amount of surround lighting.
Otherwise, you're black.
Otherwise, it's just going to be black. Right. I mean, that's physics.
Right.
So you have this light shining on the wall, which, if you go by the spec, should be D65 if you're using a D65 white point monitor. And it should
be... Or 65... Well, which typically translates in bulbs, 6,500 degrees Kelvin typically yes. is what they're talking about in bulbs.
Right, right. Right. And then the other thing is you want the... intensity of the light to be somewhere around 10% of your monitor displaying a pure white field.
Now, how do you figure that out?
You figure that out
by
buying my book, because I can't remember how that translates into nits or candela off the top of my head. But you can, if you want to be a stickler, basically all you need is a photo meter, a spot meter will tell you.
Oh, okay. How bright it is. So like regular camera meters, yeah. camera spot meter.
That's
okay.
That's simple. Mm-hmm. You're not measuring for color. You're simply measuring for brightness,
right.
Foot candles specifically. Right. And, the spec is 10%, but... if you're 10 to 20%, then you're doing all right.
And now we're talking about LCDs, CRTs, plasmas, and we're not talking reflective.
This is an important point. The current specifications, the SMPTE recommended practice guidelines that I mined for the information I present in my book, are technically retired right now.
Right.
They were based on CRT tube monitors, which at this point you can't buy
yep.
unless you're getting them used, and then God help yeah. you in terms of how many hours are on them. So those specs have been retired, while I'm assuming someone out there is figuring out recommended practices for flat panel displays. But of course, there are many types of flat panel displays, right?
Yeah, and it's changing all the time.
It's changing all the time. Right now, you've got LCD, whether it's LED backlit or not. We've got plasma that are in favor at the moment. Everyone's hoping that OLED displays will get to the point where they're affordable and big enough to do what we want to do. And God knows what other flat panel technologies are just around the corner. At one point, a technology called SED was supposed to be the holy grail. I haven't heard about what's going on with that in a while. So it's challenging, but the bottom line is, and we're talking, we're nitpicking
right
here. The bottom right. line is, you don't want to plop a self-lit display in a dark room
right.
without some backlighting, because it's going to make everything seem brighter than it is.
Right.
And you don't want to park it in a brightly lit room, because that's going to make it seem darker than it is. And besides which, if you have too much light in your room, you're going to get veiling reflections on the front of the monitor, which is going to result in perceptually diminished contrast.
And by veiling reflections, you mean?
You on the monitor.
Right.
You really don't want any light in front of the monitor that's going to fall onto the monitor. Right. That's going to cause a veiling reflection.
Right.
So hence the light control. You don't want a window flooding sunlight into the room because that's just going to play havoc with your perception of the image that you're looking on.
Not to mention the sun, the color temperature of your room will change as the sun moves through the sky. And
yes, that as well.
So the gray that looks great at noon doesn't look so great at
here's
dusk.
The bottom line, and this is, in my opinion, the most important thing for people who are just setting up their first room to keep in mind. So, you know, I had my room gray, backlit, you know, monitor set up properly, blah, blah, blah. Just as an experiment, I took a scene and I turned the backlight on so everything was properly set up and I graded it. Then I took a coffee break, came back, turned the backlight off, queued up the scene again, graded it a second time. Those grades were noticeably different.
Yeah.
They weren't night and day, but they were noticeably different. I made different decisions just as a result of that backlighting. You know, and I'm sure some of that was also just, you know, you never do the same thing exactly twice.
Right.
But the truth is, I was seeing a slightly different image. It does make a difference. Will it make enough of a difference to get you fired? Depends on your client.
Right.
You know, you don't want to take that chance. You want to ideally, my feeling is if you're charging money for the service, you want to do it as right as you possibly can. And that means you need to see the image as it's supposed to be seen. You need to see the real image, not a perceptually altered version of the image.
So we've talked about controlling the light, mm-hmm. Okay? Close the windows, pull down the shades, block out the light.
And you need light blocking shades. If there is a window,
yeah.
You know, you don't want, you know, those beautiful deep red velvet shades that you're using, because that's just going to give you a little bit of red fill light, which is not what you want.
Yeah. So control the light. Mm-hmm. That means also a backlight behind your light emitting monitor, because projectors are a different
projection's a whole different ballgame.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's probably not what the beginning colorist is
going
to
do anyway.
That's an investment.
That's a step
I know, because I've made it.
Yeah. The controlling your environment. So we're talking about neutral walls, painted relatively dark, but not too dark.
Well, you know, gray.
Gray, exactly. And now let's talk a little bit about controlling your monitor. Because this drives people freaking insane, right?
What do I buy?
I mean, CRTs are gone.
Right.
CRTs, there were standards, there were spec. I mean, you know, I bought the CRT and it was, you know, you had to have SMPTE-C phosphors. If you had SMPTE-C phosphors, you were considered, you know, that you're in spec.
Right.
Right? That's all gone.
Yeah. SMPTE-C phosphors, by the way, not the same as REC 709.
Right. Right.
And I've read posts by colorists saying, God, you know, I've calibrated my monitor to REC 709, but I like my Sony monitor better. And I'm like, yeah, because they were SMPTE-C phosphors. They're different.
Right.
There's the whole industry has had to go through a period of readjustment, and it sucks, right? Because at no point was there sort of a centralized emperor of video technology that was able to say, all right, we're all going to do this now. And everyone could say, okay. I mean, for the longest time, you bought a Sony monitor.
Right.
That's just what you did. It was an easy decision to make. If anyone asked, I would teach classes and people would say, what do you buy? And I'd say, you buy a Sony monitor.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Yeah. There are some other monitors that, you know, are just as good. I invested in JVC myself. I still have my JVC HD tube. But, you know, it was cut and dried. And now that is gone, replaced by a theoretical standard, REC 709, that all other monitors are aspiring to match. So, you know, and again, I go into this in ridiculous detail in the book, but when you're buying a monitor, you're looking for a monitor, A, that aspires to calibratable REC 709 compliance. REC 709 being the color and gamut standard for high definition video. broadcast video specifically. So you want a monitor that's capable of being set to Rec. 709 and that can be calibrated. You know, usually the monitors these days are probe calibrated. So you plug in a probe, you dangle it in front of the monitor, you run a test pattern, which consists of a number of colored swatches. It takes the measurements and then it provides a LUT file that essentially says, okay, this is how to calibrate the monitor and just make everything look right. So that's one thing that you're looking for, and you'll know you're good with broadcast, which is what we're paid for.
Yep.
The second thing you're looking for is good blacks. And, you know, then you'd say, well, what's good blacks? And there's no solid answer I can give other than blacks that look black to you. This has been a lot of people's knock on LCD monitors, although that's getting better with different technologies. The idea is in your well set up room with light control, a gray surround, and backlighting, if you put up a black field on the monitor, it ought to look black to you. It shouldn't look gray. If it looks gray, you're in trouble.
Right.
Because that means, you know, what did I say an hour ago? Whatever your scopes say, if you've got a well-calibrated monitor, that should take precedence. Well, if your monitor can't show you
what your scopes are showing,
that's convincing,
right,
then you're going to be tempted, or more to the point, your client's going to be tempted to tell you, no, crush the blacks more, crush the blacks more. Because you just can't get to where they want to be visually. And they're not looking at your waveform monitor. You know, if you're an experienced colorist, you can look at the waveform monitor. Oh, my blacks are parked at zero. I'm good. I'm stopping now. You know, even though the monitor may be a little bit washed out, I know to stop. But your client doesn't know that, and they're not going to look over there, and they're not going to have the same faith that you do.
So if your monitor's blacks are automatically lifted, they're going to just want to keep competing against that, even though there's nowhere for it to actually go visually.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it'll just suck. Yeah. I mean, it'll just be no fun for anyone. Yeah. So that's one reason why plasma monitors have found a lot of acceptance at a lot of very high-end suites around the world at this point,
yep,
because they do have excellent blacks. And the second to latest generation of plasma displays have the kind of gray tracking quality that makes them possible to calibrate for the level of work that we do.
Right.
Now, when you use a plasma display, you're going to have to use third-party hardware to calibrate it, which is a whole different hour-long discussion.
Yeah.
but it's not a huge deal, and it's not the ordeal it once was. It's something that lots of people are doing. And if you're putting together a humble suite, you're just getting started, you can go ahead and get into a Panasonic THX rated plasma display, which has the parameters necessary for a qualified calibrator to come in. And you want to make sure you've got a good calibrator, because at that point you're kind of throwing yourself on their mercy that they're getting it done right.
And they know how to get into the service menus, and they know how to get
exactly
into the,
and they have the probe and the software to do the right job. You don't want someone who's just going to throw in a Blu-ray copy of DVD Essentials,
right,
and tweak according to color bar,
which is fine for a home theater.
It's just
you're charging money for it.
That's not what THX video qualified calibrators are doing, or ISF qualified calibrators.
Right.
They're doing something in order of magnitude beyond that, if they're doing it right.
Right.
And at that point, you have a Rec. 709 compliant display.
Right.
If you've got a good calibrator.
Right.
So, that's another possibility. Problem with that is every time you want to tune up, you need to call in the calibrator again.
Right.
And good ones aren't always easy to schedule.
Yes. Well, they tend to be a little pricey.
They tend to be pricey, and
they tend to be busy.
They tend to be busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. absolutely.
Because there aren't a lot of, because their equipment investment is fairly substantial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're walking around with probes, I mean, they've got just in hardware alone.
Well, the guy
10,
I
15
use,
grand.
The guy I use, his name is Greg Lowen, and he's great. And his photospectrometer is $25,000.
Exactly.
You know, there's no way I'm going to buy that.
Yep.
That's just not something I need to have every day.
Yeah.
But I need to schedule him a month in advance. Right. I can't just bring him in like that.
Right.
So, you know, but again, we're veering off into a discussion.
Into a higher
that,
level.
That, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so you want a monitor that's Rec. 709 compatible. You want a monitor that can be probed or calibrated manually, one of the two. And you want a monitor that has blacks that look black to you and don't look gray. Those are the basics. There are many other characteristics that we could talk about, but those are the basics.
If you wanted to take it one step further, because I do frequently see people talk about this online and tend to be people who are trying to move up into turning grading into more of a career.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking specifically really on LCDs, 8-bit, 10-bit.
Right.
Is it important in your estimation that, is a 10-bit LCD like the minimum?
Well, okay. So this is a tough one. Because there's the stringent answer and there's the not stringent answer. And I've actually had this conversation with a friend and colleague of mine, Robbie Carman.
Yes.
There is a company. Oh, am I going to forget their name? Now I am. They're a manufacturer of monitors.
Flanders Scientific.
Thank you. Hope that wasn't too much of a pause for
it's
your recording.
That's all right.
But Flanders Scientific, their monitors are great. I've evaluated them. They're wonderful. Robbie has made an investment. They have two levels of monitors. They have an 8-bit monitor that's $4,000-ish. And they have a 10-bit monitor, which uses tri-color LED backlighting to achieve true 10-bit rendition and deeper blacks. And it's similar to what the Dreamcolor monitor is doing. And that's around $9,000.
Around $995, something like that. Yeah, it's about $5,000 more for the 10-bit.
Yeah. So you know, you can go 8-bit or you can go 10-bit, and it's a really deliberate decision on your part. Now, I'll start out by saying that 10-bit is desirable.
Right.
10-bit is always desirable. You're going to get fewer potential banding artifacts. If you're working with 10-bit signals, which, generally speaking, most acquisition formats are 8-bit, most, not all, then we bring them into our grading software, which is capable of applying 10-bit corrections to them. So while we're never going to turn that 8-bit data into 10-bit data, but if I apply some sort of gradient correction, then I'm capable of injecting a 10-bit element into that data stream, and it would be nice to preserve it.
Right.
And while I'm working, it would sure be nice to monitor it at 10-bit so that I don't get sidetracked by potential banding artifacts that may or may not be real.
Right.
Now,
and by real, we mean it's not in the signal, it's the monitor itself that's introducing the problem.
Right, right.
So the
detail-oriented answer is you want 10-bit, ideally. You know, if you don't know what kind of work you're going to be doing and you want to be able to accommodate everyone at the high end, 10-bit is good. Now, the pragmatic answer is if the majority of the work that you do is, you know, it's cable broadcast, it's low budget work, it's, you know, stuff where the clients aren't going to nag you if they see a little bit of banding here or there. And by the way, they probably won't, because most image has enough noise in it to successfully dither the banding away. Very few of us sit around grading test patterns all day long.
Yeah, and it's only when we get really aggressive, oftentimes that will expose banding in 8-bit.
So, you know, pragmatically speaking, there's nothing wrong with an 8-bit display. And you can do successful grades with 8-bit displays. You just have to be aware that there's one aspect of the signal that you may not necessarily be seeing with complete accuracy.
Right.
And, you know, again, it goes back to what your clientele will support. You know, if your company 3, then you are 10-bit all the way. You've got 2K projectors. You are doing everything strictly according to spec. You're calibrating on a daily basis. You're doing everything right. If you're a regional colorist working in a non-primary market and most of your clients are cable advertisers, they're probably not that concerned with that level of detail.
Right.
So that's the pragmatic answer.
Yeah. And I mean, and I guess, and really what it comes down to is you're looking at something like, if you want 10-bit, you don't have much of a budget, probably you're looking at a Dreamcolor. If you want something that has more accurate blacks, which I kind of call the Dreamcolor kind of the PVM series, if you're to relate it to the old CRTs.
Yeah, I read your review.
Yeah.
And it was a fair review. I mean, I popped in.
Yeah, yeah, you did. That's right. You took a look at it. Yeah. And then, and I think if you wanted to step up and probably have truer trap blacks, and you'd probably then start looking maybe the 8-bit Flanders. Mm-hmm. And then if you wanted to start competing and maybe taking some of the low-end work away from Company 3, you're probably looking at like some of the 10-bit Flanders or something like that. Would you?
Well, that's a fair assessment. But here's something else I'll bring up, and that's the client experience.
Right.
You know, if you're doing mostly unsupervised work, or you're doing, you know, you have a client come in for maybe one day out of the session and sit next to you, then any one of these 24-inch displays is fine.
Right.
One of the limitations, even with the good LCD displays, is the viewing arrow is very narrow.
Right.
So off-axis viewing can be a challenge if you have more than one person in the room who isn't willing to pretty much sit like right next to you or right behind you and look over your head. You know, that's not necessarily the best client experience, depending on the work that you do. That's another reason why people have been deploying calibrated plasma more widely, because you get a bigger display. You know, heck, for $2,000, you can get a 50-inch display. Yeah. You know, you're going to put at least $3,000 into calibrating it, at least. And potentially, you know, $3,000 to $6,000 in the calibrating it, somewhere around there. And but at that point, you've got a huge display. It's impressive to the client. They can sit behind you, get out of your hair. I don't know how you feel, but I hate having clients at my elbow. It makes me crazy.
Yeah, me too, a little bit.
And the other thing is your off-axis viewing is going to be better. So, you know, if you're putting together a medium-sized grading suite, plasma has a lot of advantages. And, you know, when you look at the total cost of ownership, you know, okay, yeah, the monitor is $2,000, then you add potentially $6,000 of calibration.
Now, well, $6,000, is you're talking like the lifetime calibration cost of?
Well, I'm assuming you're wanting to do, you know, now I'm talking the 3D LUT calibration route where you have a probe and you have a, you know, calibration outboard hardware and the software to generate the LUTs and all of that.
Right.
You know, if you go that route, you know, you're still well within the ballpark of dedicated broadcast LCD displays. So it depends on what you do. Now, that's a lot more hassle, and it's a lot more to maintain, and it's more to mount. So, you know, there's sort of in my mind, two classes of suites right now. One is the one-person suite, and it's you, your gear, and the monitor, and maybe a client at your side, maybe not. The other class of suite is, you know, it's you and then two, maybe three clients at a console behind you, larger room, and it's more important to have a bigger viewing experience.
Yeah, you can't have the guy on the left of the table seeing different colors. different contrast than the guy on the right of the table.
And even 24 inches, it's a little squint-worthy depending on how far back they're sitting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, that's how I look at it. And it really, again, it depends on what kind of money you have and what kind of clientele you're working with, what the best decision is going to be for you. You can monitor well in either instance.
Well, Alexis, I have taken up way too much of your time, 2 hours. My stomach's rumbling. We need to get ourselves some Thai food.
Sounds good.
So let's wrap this up. I can't thank you enough for coming down here, supporting Tao of Color. And I'm really looking forward to the book. I'll start reading it tonight.
And I'll go ahead and pimp it. Specifically, the book is Color Correction Handbook. It's from Peach Pit Press. Available on Amazon now. I'm told it's in stock.
It is. And, I can confirm that.
Help me make it not a niche title. Buy a copy, please.
And where else can people reach you?
People can reach me at www.alexisvanhurkman.com. That's AlexisVanhurkman.com. And my suite, if any of you want to work with me, is located at Twitch Post. That's one word, twitchpost.com. You can check out some of my work there as well.
And what I'll do is when this interview goes out, I'll provide links to all of that stuff. So you just head to taocolor.com and you'll find all the links that get you right to all the various stuff. Not only how to reach Alexis, but some of the various stuff we've talked about. And there's some great links on the web, simultaneous contrast and on simultaneous color contrast, simultaneous brightness contrast, showing some of these optical delusions that we were talking about. And great. I appreciate it. Thank you very, very much, sir.
Thank you.
And that'll wrap our 3-part interview with Alexis Van Hurkman. I hope you enjoyed this discussion because I absolutely did. This is part of a continuing series of interviews with the movers, shakers, and thinkers in the field of color grading for moving images. Full show notes for this interview with links to everything we've discussed can be found at taoofcolor.com. That's Tao with a T, or if you prefer, Tao with a D, of color.com. Thanks for listening.